Thank you, Chair. When Archbishop Rowan was first appointed, it was in this synod, and I just, as I went past, I just whispered to him, "Have fun." I'm not sure 10 years later whether that was an appropriate greeting. In 1837, the Honourable Robert Curzon visited the Patriarch of Constantinople with a letter from the Archbishop of Canterbury requesting the Patriarch to give him a permit to visit the monasteries of the Holy Mountain of Athos. Curzon gives a vivid account of his visit. "After we had smoked our pipes, I presented the letter of the Archbishop of Canterbury. It was read aloud to the Patriarch, first in English and then translated into Greek. 'And who?' quoth the Patriarch of Constantinople, the supreme head and primate of the Greek Church of Asia, 'who is the Archbishop of Canterbury?' 'What,' said I, a little astonished at the question, 'who,' said he, 'is this Archbishop?' 'Why, the Archbishop of Canterbury.' 'Archbishop of what?' said the Patriarch. 'Canterbury,' I said. 'Oh,' said the Patriarch. 'Ah, yes, and who is he?' Here all my English friends and myself were taken sadly aback. We had not imagined that the high priests before us could be ignorant of such a matter as the one in question. The Patriarch of the Greek Church, successor of Gregory Nazianzus and John Chrysostom and the Heresiarch Nestorius, seemed not to be aware that there were any other denominations of Christians besides those of his own church and the Church of Rome. We explained that the Archbishop of Canterbury was a man eminent for his great learning and his Christian virtues, that he was the primate of the and chief of the great Reformed Church of England, and a personage of such high degree that he ranked next to the blood royal, that from time immemorial the Archbishop of Canterbury was the great dignitary who placed the crown upon the head of our kings, those kings whose power swayed the destinies of Europe and of the world, and that this present Archbishop and primate had himself placed the crown upon the head of King William IV, and he would soon crown our young queen.' 'Well,' replied the Patriarch, 'but how is that? How can it happen that the head of your church is only an archbishop?' I cannot write an answer to the letter of the Archbishop of Canterbury, I said. 'Yes, yes, of Canterbury. For I do not see how he who is only an archbishop can by any possibility be the head of a Christian hierarchy. But as you come from the British Embassy, I will give my letters to you as you desire, which will ensure your reception to every monastery which acknowledges the supremacy of the Orthodox faith of the Patriarch of Constantinople.' Exactly 150 years later, in December 1987, the Patriarch of Constantinople and the Archbishop of Canterbury were both present in Westminster Abbey for evensong, before attending in this very hall the annual Constantinople lecture given that year by the Lady Margaret Professor of Divinity in the University of Oxford, Dr. Rowan Williams. Those of us who were present can testify that it was an impressive account of classical Nicene Christology, informed by the lecturer's profound personal knowledge of those whom Queen Elizabeth I described as the fathers of best antiquity. The text was never published, but the original manuscript was discovered in the Geniza of Lambeth Palace last July, and so I hope we shall soon be able to read it. It is this living acquaintance with the teaching of the undivided church that has enabled you, Archbishop Rowan, to enjoy such warm relations with the Church of England's many ecumenical partners. You have made a number of fraternal visits to the Bishop of Rome, despite his jurisdiction, and with whose blessing, significantly, he celebrated with the papal blessing an Anglican Eucharist at the papal altar of the ancient Basilica of St. Sabina. And on a personal pilgrimage to that hotbed of hotbedded orthodoxy, the Holy Mountain of Athos, a number of the monasteries greeted his arrival with the ringing of bells and the invitation to take a stall of honor during the divine office, his assiduous attendance at which, from 3 o'clock in the morning, was much admired. A bishop is above all a teacher, And most of St. John Chrysostom's teaching is to be found in his sermons to his ordinary congregations. They are all extremely vivid, and they do not pull their punches. And this is the tradition of preaching that Archbishop Rowan, you still exemplify. On many occasions in this synod, we can testify. I particularly remember a sermon on the vision of the prophet Isaiah. Impromptu one here. Though I think it is unlikely that you have ever compared Her Majesty to Herodias, as St. John Chrysostom did once to the Empress. Time does not allow me, well, I've been very strictly told this, to mention everyone or everything. But, in a moment, the Epistle to the Hebrews said something like that, didn't it? But Jane, too, is no mean theologian. In fact, in the far-off days of the British Council of Churches, Jane, Paul Fiddes, and I were members of a commission that produced a report in three volumes entitled The Forgotten Trinity. It is still in print. There were cynical friends said to me, yes, yes, you mean the forgotten Trinity. Jane contributed a particularly challenging paper on the fatherhood of God. And so now, Archbishop Rowan and Jane, on behalf of my ecumenical colleagues, I give you the ancient imperial acclamation, Is Bona Eti, or as it would be translated into the language of the West, Ad Multos Annos. I don't know what it would be in Welsh. And I wish you great thanks for all you have done and are still doing to the ecumenical movement. And I wish you both long and happy and fruitful years by the Cam. And there's a very excellent wine merchant just opposite Magdalen, where... from which I keep my brother supplied with malt whiskey and rather special gins. Now, I would like to end on a more serious note with a passage which you will know well, but some members of Synod may not be. It is a passage from St. Dorotheus of Gaza, who is a 6th century Palestinian abbot, and he's talking to his community about love in the brotherhood. Imagine, he says, a circle drawn on the ground. This circle is the world, and the center is God. And the radii of the circle represent the paths that people can follow to God. The longing to come closer to God, the saints move towards the center of the circle, so that the nearer they come to the center, the nearer they come both to God and to one another. The closer they come to God, the closer they come to one another, and the closer they come to one another, the closer they come to God. This, I believe, has been a guiding principle of your ministry as Archbishop, and I commend it as a principle to the members of Synod. I add, though St. Dorotheus doesn't, if we take any other path than a radius to the circle, we shall simply be going round in circles. Thank you.